Committee come to order. It's Friday, April 4th, and the time is 8:04 a.m. Today we are joined by Representative Seaton, myself, Representative Gaddis, Representative Reinbold, and Representative Peggy Wilson. On our agenda today is H.R. 9, Delaying Implementation of State Standards, and SB 195, Post-Secondary Education Loans and Grants. So first we'll begin with H.R. 9, Delaying Implementation of State Standards. If we could have the bill sponsor come forward, we'll get going.
Morning, Madam Chair. This is Representative Tammy Wilson, District 2. And this is not delaying anything for those of who haven't seen it yet, but I would ask if the Chair would mind putting the current CS as a working document in front of the committee so that we'll all be talking about the same version, which would be version N.
Thank you, Representative Wilson. Let's see what we have.
I move version N.
Here's the CS. Yeah. Sorry.
I move committee substitute H.R. 9, number 28 LS 1224 / N.
And then
Representative Seaton.
Is that moving it to be accepted as our working document or moving the bill?
Yes, and I apologize. I don't have any good.
As a working document.
Thank you. I just wanted to be sure that my vice chair did not come well equipped, and she did her best job, and I appreciate that. Well equipped with the proper verbiage. So you came equipped. And so with that, thank you, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as you know, I've been in front of you a couple times, and I think we finally have it where we want to be. And so where this has changed and where it has evolved is that at the beginning of the school year, going around and speaking to different schools, we heard a lot of pushback with not just the idea of a Common Core, but that we're going to do teacher evaluation. We graded the schools with a star system. There was a lot of moving parts, new standards. Now there'll be new testing. We're not ready. We need to just slow down, stop everything, and take a breath. Well, since that time, and the standards have now, the Alaska standards have been put into place, and there's more understanding of what the teacher development and evaluation looks like, most of the districts have embraced a lot of the changes and know that it will take a while. But so why is this resolution in front of you? The resolution in front of you is because we have now signed a waiver, because we have now left no child left behind us, and for 10 years we've been trying to work within a system that ultimately has not worked, and that's why now we are with a waiver system with that. And so what this resolution calls for is, now that we have put everything into place, what is it going to cost the districts? Can we do everything that the waiver tells us that we must do? And one of the big portions of that is the testing. You know, do we have the infrastructure if we have to go to online testing? And how do we know that? Because most of the fiscal notes that we have here in the state has to do with cost to the state, not cost to the municipalities or cost to the school districts. And so if you look into the Be Resolved section, that's exactly what it does, is it takes into account that we really don't know how much is this going to cost, whether or not we have the infrastructure, where do we need to go next, and we're asking the department to make those inquiries and to be able to come back to the House and to speak to us about that as far as the curriculum alignment, technology improvements, teacher preparation, and new standards-based assessments. The other portion I think it makes clear is that the state is not going toward the Common Core Standards Initiative. It's very part, the initiative part is the important part, not the word standard. This was an initiative that was pushed forward nationally that the state has determined not to go with the whole initiative. Is some of the standards based on some of the Common Core standards? Yes, some of it is based on it. Is it 100% word for word? No. Can we make changes ourselves without going back to a national consortium? Yes, we can. If we had adopted the Common Core Standards Initiative as written, it would have meant that we were taking something as a whole, similar to a lot of times when we take federal regulations, and not having that potential to be able to make the changes. But we did not do that to the state. We did not take money that locks us in to having to have standards that are done by the national group. We did our own, and therefore can make the changes ourselves. And so the other part that we wanted to make sure that was in here is that we will not become part of a national data system. We will make sure that our system, if we determine to have one, will be one by the state of Alaska, and the state of Alaska will be the only one that will have access to that. So with that, Madam Chair, I know this for some are the first time that they've seen it, so whatever you would like to do at this point is fine with me.
Thank you, Representative Wilson. And we'll let the record show that Representative Drummond has joined us, Representative Sadler, and Representative Ledoux have joined us. Seeing no, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On page 3, the further resolved lines 1 through 5, I'm trying to figure out exactly what the parameters of that are. We are engaged with WICHE, which is a Western Interstate Compact on Higher Education, and I happen to be one of the members of the House that is representing the House on that commission. I want to find out if there's any disagreement between the initiatives that WICHE does and this further resolved.
Representative, through the chair, no.
Looks like we don't have any other questions. Oh, Representative Seaton.
Madam Chair, I guess I just want to request the sponsor to clarify how we may not enter into or renew any agreement with an organization with a state compact that requires us to cede any autonomy if we're in a compact and an agreement with, if we're in WAMI, if we're in any of those kinds of initiatives that are not nationwide but are between states, that are agreements that we carry out the aspects of that. I'm wanting to make very sure that this does not in any way impact or is intended to impact any of those state or compact agreements.
Representative, through the chair, we are not conceding our autonomy or control over state standards when we're in those programs. We have jointly gone into those programs so that we would actually get more information for our students, give more programs for them. It's a joint program. Now, if we were to say that a third party, and this goes back to the consortium that we had not joined, but we were just sitting in and listening to, that would have control over our standards and be able to change them without, you know, having asked us or got our consent. When you're talking about entities in which we've gone into agreements for the university so that more programs can be more affordable to our students, this would have absolutely no effect because we are not giving them control. We are in an agreement together that at any time, if those programs are not doing what the state of Alaska wants, we will no longer continue them. So that's not releasing any control.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We do have, I think, the commissioner.
The commissioner is in the room. And we'll ask him to come forward, and I'll let you have another go at it. Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Before we go there, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Wilson, just this question may have been answered before, and I apologize. So, but what are the implications for the state's waiver from No Child Left Behind should this resolution pass?
Representative Sadler, what this, through the chair, what this is asking is it has no impact on the waiver. We're asking the department to make sure that we understand what we have agreed to do in the waiver and what those costs of the waiver is as well, versus wait till 10 years down the line, like we did with No Child Left Behind, and say, well, this didn't work for us, after we spent a lot of money, a lot of time, pretty much changed directions when No Child Left Behind came in. And we heard from, I've been hearing at least for many years, all the issues that there were for the state of Alaska with the No Child Left Behind. And that is the reason why we did go with the waiver. But the waiver also, you know, we have made a lot of agreements. And a lot of those costs will go back on the school district and not on the state. So I think understanding what we've agreed to sooner than later will be more beneficial to everyone.
And follow up, Representative Sadler.
Yeah, follow up. So again, reading the resolution, whereas U.S. Department of Education has granted us a waiver based in part on the college and career writing standards, you say it has no impact on the waiver. And what do you base that decision or assumption upon?
Representative Sadler, to the chair, we have an agreement on the waiver. This does not say we're wanting to break it at all. What I would hope would happen is if we found any issues, we would then now be able to go back and renegotiate the waiver, which some states already have if there are any major issues. For instance, let's say that we've gone to a testing, which we're not to that point yet, and it takes all the school districts to have the internet. And we can't get the internet without a high cost, and we need to stay with a pencil and paper. So we may have to go back and renegotiate that portion of it now versus find ourselves not in compliance.
And is there no timeline? I mean, how much time do we have to renegotiate the waiver?
Mr. Sevler, through the chair, it's my understanding that any time we can go back with issues and work those out. Now, whether or not, you know, the negotiation would come out positive, I'm not sure, but my concern more than not is to let's find out the issues now. Let's not find out 5, 6, 7 years from now when everybody's, again, reinvested more money into more curriculum, into more types of programs, than to say, oh, guess what, this one doesn't work either, and now we want you to pivot again. And those are high costs to our districts. And because we don't put those in our fiscal notes, I don't believe we've had the vetting that we should have had on the state level.
Thanks. Representative Peggy Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Throughout the resolution, you are asking the House of Representatives to do things. You're asking the commissioner to do things. You're asking the State Board of Education and Early Development to do things. What is the, and I'm sorry, I didn't look, do you know what the total amount of the fiscal note is going to be?
Representative Wilson, through the chair, no, we have not had any fiscal notes at this point. I am hoping that most of this has already been done before we went into the agreement with the waiver. I haven't seen it yet. Most of these costs are actually, we're asking the department absolutely to get this information. We're not asking the House to do, the House is really urging the State Board of Education and the department to have this information. I would have hoped that they would have had a lot of this before we signed it. So I think until we know what exists now and what more they will have to gather, we'll see a fiscal note at that point.
Madam Chair, I'll wait and ask the commission.
Sure. Representative Ledoux.
On page 2, the second paragraph, where it says that many school districts in the state lack the technology, infrastructure, et cetera, to provide the online testing. Have the school districts asked for these, for a delay in implementation of the standards? I'm trying to look through my supporting documents right now. I'm not sure I'm seeing letters from any of the school districts asking for this.
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, we are not asking for a delay. We have changed this. This is a working document now that does not ask for a delay. What we're asking now is that we have a better understanding that with this new waiver that we have, that we'll be able to meet all the obligations that we have already agreed to. What this whereas does state, and we knew this from the very beginning, is that if we were going to go to online testing and be mandated within the next 2 or 3 years, that we have many districts out there that have very limited broadband, and whether or not you would be able to download the test, you know, days before you took it, what would happen if the system crashed, you know, and they don't have an IT person on there. It's just more information as we're going there. So we are no longer asking for it to be delayed. We are now asking the department to make sure that we are ready for what needs to be done, and also making sure that we are not going down the Common Core Standards Initiative, which has been a big concern in most districts.
Follow-up, Representative Ledoux.
So I'm not sure if I understand this, because if you're asking for all of this evaluation, et cetera, before you do something, isn't that a delay? I mean, it may be not a delay simply for the purpose of delay, but isn't it, in fact, a delay?
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, absolutely not, because they still have the standards. They're still buying the curriculum at this point, because the testing will start next year. But the testing may start with a pencil and paper document. It may not, you know, but we have time still for the department to make sure that these are in place, make sure that the funding is there for it, and that this is the direction we want to continue down, because, again, we did No Child Left Behind. Everybody was forced to jump on board, made major changes in the last 10 years, you know, from all different sorts, to find out that now it's not the plan that we're going with. Now we've said we can't meet those obligations after 10 years, and now we have a waiver. I just don't want to continue down this line for 10 years to get to the same place we are now. Let's do these reviews, which maybe most of them started already, and the information's there, and the House hasn't seen it. But the other part I want to make sure our constituents realize, too, is that we didn't go with the Common Core Standard Initiative. We have gone and started our own standards way before this initiative happened, and the line we're going right now is with a waiver, not a national initiative that many communities are very concerned about right now.
Thank you.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm really not sure. I guess I'll just ask the sponsor of the resolution, because you sit on finance. I'm sure finance has looked at this to see everything that needs to be done and is taking steps to make sure that has been included in the commissioner's budget so he can do these things.
President Wilson, through the chair. I am in hopes that most of this has been done, that we wouldn't have gone into a waiver. I have more confidence in that, into the department, that they didn't just blindly go into the waiver. They knew a lot of the costs that were going to be associated. You know, I'm just not sure how far down the line they looked. Did they look at just what it was going to take for the state, because that's all we're required to do? Or did we really look down into each one of the districts? We have 54 school districts to make sure that they would have whatever they needed to be able to purchase the curriculum, to develop the teacher evaluation that is now necessary, all the pieces that go together. And from our understanding at this point, just from September to December, many districts went a long way to get there.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm very concerned that that we are doing something we always do. We expect departments to do things that we have not provided them the money to do. And if we've asked them, and we have, I'm not looking even at this, but I'm sure that most of the areas in the rail belt can handle a lot of this. There are some that can't, I'm sure. But have we made sure that we have funded the rural areas well enough so that they can put this in place? And I just think that we have done some things and stepped forward and not looked at the ramifications all along the line. So that's a shame, and it's probably something that has happened and is an ongoing problem within the state.
And Representative Wilson, I think you're speaking to Representative Wilson's resolution here. Perfect. And do we have any other questions or statements for the bill sponsor? Because I do see the commissioner here, and we'll bring him forward and ask some of the very same questions. Thank you, Representative Wilson. If we could have the commissioner come forward, and or his staff, or both. And I know that the bill sponsor has worked with the department in implementing and putting together this resolution, and Commissioner, if you can put yourself on the record.
For the record, my name is Mike Hanley. I'm the Commissioner for the Department of Education and Early Development.
And Susan McCauley, Director of Teaching and Learning Support for the Department of Education.
So, Representative Seaton, did you have a question for the Commissioner?
Madam Chair, I can address that to Commissioner Hanley, but I also wanted the Commissioner of Post-Secondary Education, who was the one that I was talking about with Wiki.
Okay, we'll make sure everybody gets in the queue. So,
Madam Chair, could I get a explanation? We keep talking about a waiver from Common Core. Would you tell us what the waiver is from and what we accepted in the waiver?
And sure. Commissioner, if you could actually explain what we call that waiver, because I've not heard it say the waiver from Common Core per se. And so I know that we speak to it in one particular term, so if you will.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Seaton, as No Child Left Behind worked towards a goal of all of our students, 100% of our students becoming proficient, it resulted in more and more of our schools erroneously being deemed as failing, not making adequate yearly progress. So you could have a school that was at 90% of their students were proficient, and they're still deemed not making adequate yearly progress. So Secretary Duncan, we've been waiting for a long time for Congress to reauthorize No Child Left Behind, to reauthorize and to adjust, make those adjustments. But in the meantime, while we wait, Secretary Duncan offered waivers to states from the most onerous parts of the of No Child Left Behind. So the waiver is from parts of No Child Left Behind. In essence, it's away from the adequate yearly progress and the measurement that all of us had to be 100%. That's what the waiver is from. There were several components that needed to be addressed, and when we looked at should we apply for a waiver, we looked at the work we were already doing and decided to move forward, obviously, and receive that waiver. So there were several things that needed to be done. You needed to have standards that would prepare your students for colleges and careers. So as we were already developing our standards, they were developed a year before we got our waiver. We had the University of Alaska and others review them to make sure that they met the criteria. You had to commit to assessing on your new standards, which is just makes sense. You want to, you know, we currently assess our students on what we teach. As we've changed our focus with new standards, we need to have an assessment that does that as well. It allowed us to move away from the adequate yearly progress and move to a separate accountability system, and that's what we call our ASPE system now, which is our Alaska School Performance Index. And that's our five-star system now that we use. So we got out of the AYP, and we moved to a system that we think is more honest and fair and reflective of what's going on in our schools. And also we needed to commit to making a component of teacher evaluations tied to student learning. So there are four components, three of which we were already working towards. The accountability, we were gladly willing to shift away from AYP, adequate yearly progress. So the waiver is from parts of No Child Left Behind, but not from standards, not from anything else.
Thank you. And Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Mr. Commissioner, briefly, you said you, the second point for the qualifications for the waiver was to be committed to assessing, assessing the standards or assessing by using the new standards. I wasn't quite sure the...
through the chair, Representative Sadler, it's to assess our students on our new standards, on our new standards that are aimed for helping them be successful after high school.
So to use those standards as an assessment tool of students.
Correct. Even if that hadn't been a requirement, there's a responsibility to make sure we're assessing what we're teaching, not using our old assessment right. That was not.
It,
was
so it sounded like for a moment you were saying we had to assess the standards.
Oh, I'm sorry. No.
Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, Commissioner. Thank you. You said that there are four components. Is that four components to the waiver? And if that's the case, could you please outline those four components? You just kind of stopped at that point.
Sorry. There, through the chair, Representative Drummond, those four components that needed to be addressed in the waiver were mm-hmm. you need to have standards, mm-hmm. Rigorous standards. You needed to be willing to assess your students on those standards. You needed to have a separate accountability system. If you're going to get away from the adequate yearly progress, you needed to move to something new. Ours is the ASPE. And you needed to commit to adjusting your teacher evaluations, if you haven't already done so, to tying a part of that to student learning.
Thank you.
Representative Ryan.
Two questions. One, what are the legal obligations to the state in regards to the waiver? That's question number one. And two, are any federal dollars tied to the waiver?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, there are no federal dollars. There was no threat of losing federal dollars. We could have stayed under the No Child Left Behind Act if we wanted to. So the legal obligations... Well, we've made a commitment in the waiver, and it's a very extensive waiver that we had to submit. We made commitments to follow through on these components. If we don't follow through on these components, decide you know, we're not going to assess or we're not going to have new standards, any one of these components, Secretary Duncan, the Department of Education, the U.S. Department of Education, could say, well, you no longer qualify for a waiver, and you no longer qualify for a waiver. Simply means that we would have to go back under No Child Left Behind. We would have to put in place strategies to address schools that were deemed failing, even though they were successful. So I don't know if they're legal obligations, but we have a responsibility to maintain our waiver.
Thank you. And I might make the point that I know sitting on the school board at the time and requesting that we have the waiver, No Child Left Behind was not working for the state of Alaska. So, Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Commissioner, that's the same question I asked of the bill sponsor. Should the resolution take effect, does this drag any timelines with this? Does this threaten our qualification for the waiver by taking more time to evaluate whatever time is necessary to evaluate the assessments, the CCR assessments?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, initially, I did have concerns with the urging to delay the implementation of standards for several reasons, that potentially being one of them. The urgings in here, I don't believe would cost us our waiver. They are urgings for action on my part and the Board of Education's part. I don't see specific timelines. I don't see that we would sacrifice our waiver from what's currently written.
Thank you.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, I know that there's a lot of areas of the state that don't even have broadband to make it possible for some of this to be done. Have you asked for extra money so that they can get that broadband? Has that happened? I mean, how have you planned to deal with that?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I'm assuming that the assumption is that all of them need broadband to take the assessments. Is that the foundation of the question?
Yes, but if you know that some of them haven't, that don't meet that criteria to be able to take the test as it's supposed to be taken, have you asked for extra money so that those areas of the state can get that? And there's some of the areas that are small towns, just not too far outside of Anchorage or Mat-Su, that don't have those capabilities. So how are we going to fix that?
Sure. Through the chair, Representative Wilson, while we recognize the importance of broadband, not only for educational purposes, but just for life in the 21st century for all of our communities, we are not the experts in broadband. We have worked with the Department of Commerce. We have worked with the Broadband Task Force. But we are consumers of broadband as an educational system, but not the experts on broadband, on what's needed, on how to get it there, how to contract with providers of that. So we provide information we can, and we partner with those who do that work, but it's typically not the Department of Education. We're the consumer end of that.
I think that, let me ask this a different way, and it might answer Representative Wilson's. Let's start out with, does the department at this time today have an assessment program that says that everybody must take the test via broadband or on the internet? And so I guess I think that may answer the next question.
Good, thank you. No. What we do recognize, though, that as we move towards a new assessment, it is timely to look at using 21st century tools. Use the tools that we currently have, the ones we currently use in today's society, to the greatest extent possible. So we have a responsibility and an obligation to assess our students in grades 3 through 10. 3 through 10. Now, I want to make sure that we can do it with the best tools possible. So if we can use that internet-based in as many places as possible, that's what we'll do. The next step will be to do some local caching, which is also computer-based, but it basically allows the test to be housed locally so they don't have to access the internet. They can access their local server, which makes it more feasible. And for places that don't have that capability, we're going to move to paper and pencil. Well, not move to it, continue with paper and pencil. So our obligation and responsibility is to measure our students on how well they're doing on these assessments or on our standards. We're going to use the best tools possible, and it'll take a while. It may take a long while before we get all of them testing using computers.
Hello. Representative Wilson.
That's exactly what I was trying to get at, and it felt like you were trying to hedge around that or something.
No.
The follow-up is, so where are you? I mean, if you're thinking of that, where are you in that process? How far have you come? Do you have somebody fixing this out so that it will be with a pencil and paper? I mean, is that available with the program? Let us know some of these things.
Sure, through the chair. We've been actively working with districts. We've done a tech readiness survey. And that's different than an overall broadband survey. It's specifically designed around the assessment. Do you have the capability to give this assessment, and what computers do you have? Do you have enough? We've done that survey. Right now, it looks like we have got 80% of our schools, which would probably represent 90-95% of our students. 80% of our schools have the capability, or at least they've been deemed acceptable, to be able to give that test using computers. So we are continuing to work specifically with the numbers and the testing window, which also makes, you have a very narrow testing window, you have to have more computers so more kids can get on at one time. If you lengthen that testing window, you don't need as many because you can spread it out over the course of several weeks. So we're moving forward now with an understanding that, you know, and working with districts to say we anticipate that you'll be testing using technology online, you'll be testing using a local caching, and you'll be testing using paper and pencil. So we're getting a clearer picture every day.
Okay, follow up.
Representative Wilson.
Yeah, I guess I'm just wanting to know, okay, you've done that now. Now you know how many kids are going to have to take it with pencil paper. So, again, I'm going to ask, is that possible? I mean, through the testing program that you have now, do they have the tests on paper that you can give to these kids? I want to know these things.
I apologize. Absolutely. When we put the contract out and put the proposal out, our RFP out, that was a requirement that to be considered responsive, you had to offer those three options. You had to offer a paper pencil test, you had to offer local caching, and you had to offer the opportunity to test online. So, no, we're fully prepared, and our testing vendor is fully prepared to give the test in those three modalities.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Ledoux.
I'm just wondering, since this is a resolution as opposed to a bill with a requirement, is this resolution asking you to do anything that you're not already doing?
I'm jumping to the resolves, be it resolved, and we are beginning on line 10 of page 2. We were already verified our college and career readiness standards. Line 16, ensure that the educational standards meet national benchmarks for college. We can get that specific information for you.
But my question is, are you already doing these things? And if you're not doing them, is the fact that there is a House, and I don't think that there's necessarily a Senate companion with it. How do you look at that? I mean, it's a request from one body. Are you necessarily going to do it if you don't want to do it?
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, you do recognize the difference between, you know, a statute and a resolution.
I do.
But I also recognize the intent of this body, and so I will not just snub my nose at any urging from this body. I recognize the concerns there, and we'll do our best to address these. I will say at one point, to delay the implementation of the standards, I would have been challenged to do so. But this has morphed and changed. So we will do that. It will be a little bit more of a challenge when we look at line 22 and we start looking at determining the related cost for each district. That will take some legwork and some staff to try to figure out what each district needs. I will say that in regulation, districts have a responsibility to review their curriculum every 6 years. So there should be a cycle of review and shifting curriculums. So it shouldn't necessarily be a new cost, but professional development, it is a shift here. The only thing I would ask with that question, to calculate the related costs of expenses, I guess I would simply ask to what end. And I say I do that respectfully. Then what? I mean, would I come to this body who's asking for that information with an expectation of support, with an expectation of an appropriation for districts to address the concerns? And if that's not the expectation, I guess I would ask, to what end would we put in the amount of effort to determine specific costs for specific districts to allow it to lay fallow and not have any meaning to it? So I hope that answers your question.
Thank you.
Well, and I know I signed on to this same resolution, and specifically the reasoning behind it was to not have another unfunded mandate to the school districts without you coming forward and saying, this is the information that we found. In order to move forward, this is what we need to do. So I look at this resolution as a suggestion that we're going to hold you accountable and that we want to hold you accountable. Also, in the same sense, I certainly get the sense back from you is that that you will step forward, that's your intention, and I think that this is a working relationship. So with that, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had two questions. First is on page 2, the last further resolved, where it says that neither the Department of Education nor the State School Board the State School Board shall expend any money to implement a set of educational standards for grades K through 12 established by the Common Core State Standards Initiative. Does this mean that no money can be spent on the three largest districts of the state that did adopt through their local school boards Common Core standards, or have those local school boards retracted their adoption of those standards and went back to the Alaska standards?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, it surely seems to state pretty clearly that for districts that adopted the Common Core prior to us adopting our standards, that we would not be able to provide trainings for them in that regard. Could we provide trainings for professional development because our standards match the pedagogical strategies of application of knowledge, not just the learning of knowledge? Could we do that? Yes, that matches our standards, but in regards to specifically the standards that they've adopted, it surely seems to say we wouldn't support them.
And so, Madam Chair, I would like the Commissioner to explain what kind of interactions that's going to cause between, let's say, the Anchorage School District and the State Board of Education or the department, which ones did? Was that Fairbanks or Juneau and Anchorage? Or I don't recall.
I know that through the chair, Anchorage did officially, I believe Juneau did several years ago. Copper River did.
That's all. Those are the three that I know.
Okay. And so my question was, how is that interaction with those school districts going to be different for implementation of their educational standards?
And I'm hoping that you'll answer from the standpoint is, how will you treat those three districts different than you may treat any other districts?
Right. Through the chair, Representative Seaton, for the education of our children, we won't treat them any different. And I surely hope that this committee would not look at us and say, look, they ignored us and they provided support to Anchorage. Because I think we have an obligation and a responsibility to support those districts. Would we support it specifically on the standards? We'd probably support it in a way and say, here's where the differences are. Here are the strategies here that you need. I know a lot of those, since they adopted before we adopted ours, they've already adopted new curriculum. But helping them understand how that curriculum aligns with our standards, I think would be very beneficial for those school districts, and I think we could support them in the same way. Recognizing the differences between our standards, And there are similarities and there are differences, but recognizing the differences and focusing on those.
Okay. And my second question, Madam Chair, would be on page 3, the further resolve there, where the department may not enter into any or renew any agreement with an organization that requires a state to cede any measure of autonomy or control over education standards assessments, including cut scores. Are there any agreements, compacts, are there any things, I'm familiar with WICHE, but I'm not familiar with any other Western Governors Associations or any other organizations where we could not renew an agreement with those organizations?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, we are involved in a couple of consortium. You know, we have one for ELL, English Language Learners, but this component seems to be specific enough to where it speaks to giving up our autonomy to control our standards. Our standards are already in place. We have the full autonomy to change them as we see fit. Our ELL consortium surely has nothing to do with controlling our standards. So although the first part caused me concern, but when I see the specificity of that, giving control over for our standards and assessments, I feel okay that none of the consortia that we belong to would ever do that.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, we'll move on. Representative Reinbold.
Okay. You know, I've struggled with this whole initiative, as you well know. And, you know, the letters that I'm getting from the teachers confirm my skepticism. I think in Alaska we have language barriers. We have literacy issues. We've got classroom size issues. We've got not enough resources in the classroom. I know in many sciences classes they're overpacked. We don't have VOTEC in many of our schools. We need to encourage and support parental involvement instead of considering parents as a pain, you know, when they walk in the door. There's a lot of issues. I'm not sure that standards are the issue. And even a letter, I got a brilliant letter last night about a teacher. This is just one more thing the teachers are going to have to go through a bunch of bureaucrats are making them do. So I guess I have a lot of questions, but one of them, what assurances do you have that this is going to be, that these standards are globally competitive and this is going to encourage morale in our schools, have better outcomes, and that there's going to be more jobs available for this, you know, that because of these standards, our kids are going to be more ready for the job market? That's question one.
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, the idea of these standards helping our kids be more ready, I think is a comparison of where we were with our old standards and also the review that we've gotten with our new standards. Most states that went ahead and adopted the Common Core, they just said, there you go, we've adopted the Common Core. Instead of adopting the Common Core, we said, will these standards prepare our kids for you at the university? And we actually had Diane Hirschberg, who has spoken, I believe, to this committee. Mm-hmm. She works with ICER, but she's with the university. She took our standards and took it to entry-level credit-bearing courses, professors who are teaching credit-bearing courses, career technical places like Avtec and others, and said, will these standards prepare? Is this what our students need so they don't need remediation? So I'm confident that our students, these standards will aim our students on a trajectory that will prepare them for that. Speaking for student morale and getting jobs, I think there's a lot. I don't think that's the expectation of a set of standards. An expectation of a set of standards is here's a goal for, you should learn this by, you know, in this area, in this grade, or at this time in your life. I don't know that the student morale is necessarily the primary component or goal of standards.
Representative Reinbold.
Okay. Yeah, it was teacher morale, student morale, parental involvement, and all that. But basically, what percentage of Alaska standards, with exception of the grammatical issues or maybe what percentage do Alaska standards align to Common Core? There's been a lot of confusion in regards to that. Okay. Copper River said they were almost identical.
To the chair, Representative Reinbold, the analysis that we've shared several times is that in English language arts, of 320 standards, 42% of those, 133, have some differences from the Common Core state standards. And while someone might qualify some of those differences as grammatical, those differences represent the work of nearly 300 Alaskan stakeholders who went line by line through our standards and determined what should be in them and what should not be in them. So while someone might qualify the words, for example, with scaffolding and support as quote-unquote grammatical, to Alaskan educators who developed our standards, that is not a minor or technical or grammatical addition. That means that we are providing support to students in a way that our corollary Common Core state standards would not. When we put in words such as using culturally relevant reading materials, someone might qualify that as a technical or minor adjustment. To Alaskan educators who worked on the standards, that was not a technical nor minor adjustment. So again, when we look through a comparison of the standards in English language arts, 42% of our standards have differences from the Common Core state standards. In math, 49% have differences from the Common Core state standards. And I suppose it is one's interpretation of what constitutes grammatical, minor, or substantive. But again, they reflect the work of Alaskan educators to determine exactly, specifically, what should be in our standards.
Representative Reinbold.
So would they be able to purchase Common Core aligned curriculum, and do they? What choices do they have in the Common Core curriculum? Are there any restrictions or limitation, or can they use any type of curriculum that they choose?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, language and statute and regulation, as I'm sure you know, gives that decision making entirely to the local level. They would go through a process that is not at all dissimilar from what they've been going through curriculum and materials adoption-wise prior to the adoption of our new standards, and that is that they need to ensure an alignment between the resources they're purchasing and the standards themselves. Sometimes that's called a crosswalk between the materials and the standards. So if there is, for example, a set of Common Core aligned materials that through a crosswalk is determined to adequately cover our standards, then they could use those materials. If there were a set of materials that is not purported to be Common Core aligned and has adequate matching to our standards, they could use those materials. They are free to use whatever materials they deem adequately aligned to the Alaska English Language Arts and Math standards.
So, and I'm going to follow up real quick because I want to be sure I understand. So what I'm hearing you say is that the department does not get involved in choosing or okaying that curriculum. What I'm hearing you say is that is done district by district at a district level. So they conceivably could okay curriculum that doesn't align itself with our new state standards, which in my opinion is very unfortunate that that could happen, but I'm hearing you say that they could very well do that.
Representative Gaddis, they could. We certainly talk with and provide professional development to districts regarding the processes by which they could ensure an alignment between our standards and the materials they purchase. At the end of the day, however, it is a local decision. Resources are adopted by local boards.
So at the end of the day, the local district makes the choice what curriculum, and the department cannot say yes or no, and does not. They may help, they may give advice, but at the end of the day, they can't say, sorry, this doesn't align, or it does align, you can or can't adopt it. That's done on a local level.
Right.
I guess I really just wanted to make that very, very clear. Representative Reinbold.
Okay, thank you. So basically, if we do decide to change a state standard, then the curriculum may or may not be aligned to it that we choose, which means the assessment may or may not be aligned to the standard, which means the teachers are going to be evaluated. I mean, there is a circle that we need to address that impacts the next. And I know there's a ton of concern about the evaluations and assessments for the teachers, and that's really where there's been a tremendous amount of concern. So as much freedom as we say we have, it really is a snowball effect. Once you've bought these millions of dollars worth of curriculum, it does affect. So we don't have the freedom that a lot of people are pretending that we have, in my opinion. Once there's a standard, then curriculum is purchased, the assessments are done, evaluations can impact the teachers. But I guess there's just so many questions I have. But another question I have is, I know there's been over 200 pieces of legislation across the nation to either delay the implementation or stop the implementation of the initiative. And I know in New York recently there was thousands of people that opted out to take tests. There was just a massive protest that went on in New York, and it's a liberal state compared to our conservative state that has high concerns over this. But what is the worst penalty that this state gets with the waiver if is there any type, you say we have a responsibility to this waiver, but there's no funding, you said, tied to it. There's nothing at all tied to it. Is that correct? I just want to make sure that I'm hearing you correctly.
Sure, that's correct. But just to be clear, our standards are not driven by the waiver. Our standards allowed us to get the waiver, but their standards are not driven by the waiver. So we could give up the waiver and still have good standards.
Okay, and we have a couple other questions. I do have another bill that we're planning to hear. So Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Commissioner, on page 2, line 20, just for reference, how do you interpret the directive of this resolution to ensure, for your department to ensure that the standards maintain state sovereignty? How would you consider that, and how might you play a role in maintaining state sovereignty? You've expressed a good faith effort to comply with the directives of the resolution. Just wondering how you would take that one on.
Right. Through the chair, Representative Sadler, even without a resolution, I think I have a responsibility. I know I have a responsibility, a moral obligation as an educational leader to not give up our state sovereignty, whether I could or not in this role, but to not give up our state sovereignty. And we hold that dear, and appropriately so. So that I can't picture a situation at this time that would cause me to make a decision that would sacrifice our state sovereignty. And I believe that this language, and I've seen it, this language came when we joined Smarter Balance as an advisory state, and people felt that we had sold our souls, that we had suddenly turned over our rights to someone else. And now we were stuck and we couldn't get out, and obviously that's not true. We told them we no longer wanted to be an advisory state, and we stepped away, but we never gave anything up in that. But I think that's where that question came from. There'd be a lot of people involved in a discussion that would ever consider the sacrificing of our state sovereignty.
And just to follow up on that, for me. May I follow up?
Please.
Thank you. Do you see any place in the Common Core standards where you would have to exercise that judgment? I certainly respect and appreciate your desire to defend our sovereignty. Can you see any place in these standards that might raise such questions?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, obviously for some it has raised questions, but not for me. And it is one of the primary reasons that we chose not to adopt. We were one of the four states originally and that have never adopted the Common Core. And that's largely because although there are some standards in there that say, you know, students should know their alphabet in kindergarten, you know, that are good, there were some guidelines around the Common Core that said, okay, you need to accept to it, fully adopt with fidelity, you need to adopt them in full, and you can add a certain amount, but you really can't change. As soon as those rules came up about what you can do with your standards, we said, we're not interested in somebody else telling us how we can adjust our standards. The adjustments we've made are important for us to be able to make, not just previously, but ongoing. So I couldn't speak to what other states feel that they have done with the Common Core, but it was intentional. We did not adopt those to not mix up or potentially suggest that we were letting somebody else set the rules for our standards.
So again, one of the reasons why you did not want to fully align and fully adopt the Common Core State Standards was to avoid just that threat.
Yes.
Good. Thank you.
And I have a question, and it goes back to college and career readiness. And college and career readiness, I think that there's not anybody that doesn't want their kid to be college or career ready. But does that actual phrase mean something else in the waiver? I mean, if we had had the waiver and we didn't use the name college and career readiness and we just said Alaskans being ready, I mean, could we have gotten the waiver without using that specific term, college and career readiness? Because I have to say that there are folks that might say that actually is another term for Common Core.
Representative Gaddis, that phrase has been around a lot longer than the Common Core has been, with the idea that we need to be preparing our students, not for graduation, but for what comes next. Interestingly, our own state statute says that we need to ensure that our students are prepared to be successful in education and work. So if we want to remove, it's a little more cumbersome to say, but it says the exact same thing, that state statute says that's our goal for education, is to ensure that our students are successful in their education and work.
So what I'm hearing you say is that college and career readiness, quote, means it's no initiative, it has no tie with anything else, it's just verbiage that means that our kids should be college ready and career ready, but it doesn't buy into the college and career readiness that Common Core buys into, that specific phrase.
That's correct.
Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Commissioner, I've heard you say that our standards are sufficiently different from Common Core that allows us to own the standards. Can you explain that a little bit?
Sure. Through the Chair, Representative Drummond, we could always own our standards when we chose not to adopt. And interestingly, when the basic guidelines for the Common Core were to accept them in their whole, in their entirety, and you can add a certain amount, as soon as we put in one standard with scaffolding and support, that we're done. We're not going to adopt the Common Core. So the goal was not to be sufficiently different. The goal was to be rigorous and actually comparable, so that our kids who are going to have to compete with students from around the country for jobs have the same skill set when they leave high school as other students around the country. So our goal was not to be different. It was to ensure that our students are successful in their education and work when they leave. So honestly, to speak to this 42% in English language art, the 49%, we would have to walk through and you could decide which was, you know, what you believe is substantive and what is not. But when you add a phrase like with scaffolding and support, it doesn't change the expectation of the student. It does change on how we get there. It does change in how we measure that, because we're expecting students to not quite have grasped that yet, and we're going to offer support in getting there. So, but in that case, the target is the same of what we want our students to learn.
Okay, thank you. If I might just add one thing. The MOA that states signed, states who adopted the Common Core restricted their changing any of the Common Core state standards. And then they said that the Memorandum of Understanding of Agreement said that they could add up to 15% additional standards. But that is it. So from a perspective of owning our standards, those sorts of rules reflected to Alaska that we would not have owned our standards, and that just was not acceptable or palatable to Alaska. So that we wanted to be able to do whatever we want, whenever we want, through our local processes and statute and regulation with our standards, and not have any restrictions on them from an outside entity.
Madam Chair, if I could.
Please.
Thank you, Ms. McCauley. That helps significantly. Will national tests of our students, after they've been taught to these Alaska standards, reflect well on Alaska standards? Or are they sufficiently different from the national standards that we're going to continue to hear criticism from people about how our kids can't keep up on a national level.
Representative Drummond, that was critical for us that that did not take place, that, that our standards were somehow less rigorous or expected less of our students. So the one national assessment that we take part in is the NAEP, and I would anticipate, I surely expect our students to compete even at a higher level and score better than they do now.
Venture.
Please, Representative Drummond.
So in your opinion, Alaska standards are more rigorous than the Common Core standards?
In regards to rigor, equal or greater, yes.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions for the Commissioner? Seeing none, thank you. And I think we did have a question for Ms. Behrens before we move to public testimony. And even though you're here for another bill, I appreciate you coming forward. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Madam.
Well, excuse me. If you will put yourself on the record for this question.
Certainly. My name is Diane Behrens. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education.
Thank you. And Representative Seaton.
Thank you. And the question I had was on page 3, the further resolve there. Are there any of the compacts or consortiums that we work with that we adopt a common set of whether there any anything where we adopt a common progression into college or any of those objects or any of those considerations that would be addressed by that further resolve?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, I would say that the context of this bill speaks to K-12 standards. As you know, we participate in the Western Interstate Commission on Higher Education. That's a statutory compact that is not, the state has already entered into. It does not pertain to K-12 standards and is not periodically renewed. The state could certainly repeal and end its membership in WICHE. The one interstate agreement that we are looking at right now that would speak to post-secondary standards is the State Authorization Reciprocity Agreement, which is a multi-state effort to apply uniform sort of rules of operation for distance-delivered programs. That is purely post-secondary education, and it would be my read, and certainly, you know, for the record, I'm not an attorney, so if you wanted to get an attorney's opinion, you should do that, but that it would not apply to the acronym is SARA, the State Authorization Reciprocity Agreement for distance-delivered post-secondary programs.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Look, we see no other questions. Thank you for coming forward. And we did close public testimony last time. Any other questions, comments? Representative Seaton.
For the sponsor. And I would just like to get on the record that you're in agreement with the statement by the Commissioner of Post-Secondary Education that distance delivery, reciprocity of the standards or the mechanism, the curriculum for distance delivery of education would not fall under the further resolve on page 3.
For the record, my name is Representative Tammy Wilson, District 2, and Representative Seaton, through the chair, I do agree with Ms. Behrens.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other comments or questions for the sponsor? Seeing that, Representative Reinbold.
I move committee substitute H.R. 9, number 28LS1224, /N, out of committee with individual recommendations.
Thank you. Seeing no objection,
I object.
Representative Drummond.
I'd like to take a roll. I'd like to see a roll call vote, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Madam Clerk, if you could take a roll call roll call count. Roll call.
This is for getting out of committee.
Yes.
This is for HR 9.
Let's keep it there.
Version M. Representative Seaton.
Yes.
Representative Peggy Wilson is absent. Representative Duncan.
No.
Representative Madu.
Yes.
Representative Sadler.
Yes.
Representative Reinbold.
Yes.
Chair Gaddis.
Yes.
I have 5 yeas, 1 nay.
Thank you. And HR 9 28LS1224 / N or version N has moved, will move out of committee. And we'll take a brief at ease while we sign some paperwork and get the new bill sponsor up. Okay, we'll come back to order, and we have somebody forward. If you'll introduce yourself for the record and your bill, we're ready to go.
Yes. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kristen Pratt. I'm staff to Senator Anna Fairclough. Senator Fairclough extends her apologies for having to leave this morning. She was called into Senate Finance, but she appreciates the committee hearing her legislation.
And we did see her in the background sitting waiting on the other bill, so I thank you.
So we've been working with the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education to reduce the burden of student debt for Alaskans. So Senate Bill 195 is what we came up with. SB 195 broadens commission membership. It allows the Alaska Student Loan Corporation to offer below-market loan terms. It increases loan limits, which haven't been increased since 1995. It changes post-enrollment deferment period to now be up to 6 months, and it amends the general definitions for on-time enrollment status. I am open to going through the sectional analysis if you guys wish, or Diane Behrens with the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education is in the audience to answer questions.
And I know, and I appreciate you coming to my office, going through it very, very thoroughly. And quite frankly, I saw it as pretty much of a cleanup bill, and that's what we had discussed, that it's pretty innocuous, that it takes some of the statutes that have been on the books for a long time and brings them up to speed, and I appreciate you bringing me up to speed as well. Don't see any questions. Representative Drummond.
Sorry. Thank you, Madam
Please.
Chair. You said something about a deferred payment of up to 6 months. Can you clarify that? Because I don't see it in the key points language as clearly as you said it.
Representative Drummond, through the chair, currently students, once they graduate or end their time enrolled in school, there is 6 months grace period, deferment period, before they have to start making payments.
Mm-hmm.
Right now we're changing that to be up to 6 months so that there's more of an option to start making payments before that time is up. I think Diane Behrens might be able to speak this better if she wants to come.
Yep.
Thank you, and again, if you'll put yourself on the record, appreciate it.
Yes, thank you. For the record, my name is Diane Behrens. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Commission on Postsecondary Education and the Executive Officer of the Alaska Student Loan Corporation. Through the chair, Representative Drummond, Ms. Pratt's explanation is exactly right. The provision is in Section 27 of the bill on page 13, and it simply changes a standing six-month deferment period to up to 6 months. The idea being that if students are, no longer students, if borrowers are in a position to begin repayment earlier, it's in their best interest to do so. This would not require them to if they're not able to, but interest is accruing. It is capitalized as part of the loan at the end of any period of deferment, and so it's one area to try to encourage them to reduce their cost of financing by beginning repayment as soon as possible.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Ledoux.
Well, even without this section, if somebody wanted to repay their loan, couldn't they repay their loan? I mean, all you'd need to do is send in a check.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, that's exactly right. However, that rarely happens. The borrower has a mindset that says, you know, I don't have to start payments until my full 6 months are in arrears. My full 6 months have expired. This gives the commission the opportunity to basically advise the student that they should begin repayment as soon as they possibly can. So it's not a mandatory thing. It simply changes the thinking around this period of deferment.
Aloha.
And let me make sure I understand. So what I'm really hearing you say is, in 6 months, my loan was due, or at least my loan payments were due. What I'm hearing you say is the due date might be moved up some. So the mindset of many people are they don't pay their payments until the payment is due. And so you have up to 6 months, but you might make the payment due sooner. So people will pay when it's due.
That's correct. We would be in communication with them sooner. Right now, our system is set up so that we don't actually start initiating billing until the 6 months have expired. And as the chair points out, typically people don't simply start making payments unless something arrives to suggest
right.
that they do.
Representative Ledoux.
I mean, I don't really have any problem with this, but I guess I wonder if you think it's a good idea to be in communication with them before the 6 months, then under current statute, why don't you just get in touch with them before the 6 months has elapsed and say, hey, you've got 6 months, but, you know, it might make financial sense for you to begin it earlier than that.
Through the chair, we could certainly do that.
And then I'll just make the obvious statement that human nature typically doesn't pay a bill until it's due. And you could do it all day long, but I think that human nature plays a part in that, too. Representative Sadler.
I have to. My last semester in college, I took a finances class that taught me that if you pay bills early, there's less accrued interest. And so I'm concerned that college graduates would not know that. If they don't start paying sooner, they'll pay more later. But I understand you say that you send out dunning notices or for repayment student loans?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I think what would happen under this new sort of structure is that we would be in touch with a student as soon as their graduation date occurs. They would indicate to us whether or not they could begin repayment early. If they could, we would set up their schedule to begin making payments.
I would encourage you to follow the lead by Representative Ledoux and reply to them that they do currently have the opportunity to begin paying immediately and the benefits of doing so.
Thank you, Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Behrens, could you explain what the authority to offer consolidation to state residents means?
Through the chair, Representative Drummond, the corporation currently has the ability to consolidate loans, but the loans that we can currently consolidate are ones that we are the original maker on. So in other words, the underlying loans have to be loans that we have originated. The change that's proposed by this bill that would allow borrowers who are state residents to consolidate loans made by other education lenders. So if it's beneficial to them, they want to consolidate all with a single lender, they have loans with us, they have loans with another lender, and the rates that we offer are beneficial, then we could consolidate those loans.
If I could continue on that. Thank you. That's that helps significantly. So this would apply, in other words, to loans that were made prior to, say this passed, went to the voters and passed. It would then apply retroactively to loans that were made previously, both by the Alaska Student Loan Corporation and loans by others.
Through the chair, Representative Drummond, that's correct.
Okay, but the borrower has to be a state resident. In other words, get their wherever they got their education and spent the loan money, they would have to return to Alaska, be a resident in order to qualify for the consolidation aspect of this.
Absolutely,
of this bill.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Ledoux.
It seems like once upon a time that you were able to get student loans through the state of Alaska, and it was lower than you could get it if you went to a bank or something like that. And then I don't know when it seemed to have changed, because I'm looking at my kids' student loans that I'm still paying off. And it seemed like the rate of interest was no better than a commercial institution, and sometimes even worse. So does this let it go back down to a better rate than you can do at a commercial institution?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, the markets control the rate at which we're able to offer loans. The way the Alaska Student Loan Corporation finances loans is we issue debt in the financial market. So the market materially changed after the collapse in 2008 of the asset-backed market. The appetite for asset-backed debt literally disappeared. It is slowly coming back, but the rates associated with
bonds. I don't know what asset-backed debt means.
That would be bonds that are backed by the revenue from the assets that are the loans that are financed with the bond proceeds. So in other words, we go to the market, we issue bonds, the bonds are structured so that the loans that we make, the interest on those loans repay the bond interest and principal. That's the asset that backs the bonds, similar to a mortgage backed bond, which is a bond, the proceeds from which are used to finance home mortgages. That market collapsed in 2008. You may recall that the mortgages were considered basically overvalued, and student loans were caught up in that entire thing, even though the student loans were a different type of asset.
Follow-up.
Representative Ledoux.
So basically, the only advantage of the, and for many people it's quite an advantage, of the student loan program is that if you're 18 years old with no credit history, you can get a loan from the Alaska Student Loan Program, but you're not going to get it at a better rate than a bank, but your credit history doesn't have to be as substantial as to get a commercial loan?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, typically what you see with other financial institutions that lend is they do something that's called risk-based pricing. And so they do look at the credit of the applicant, and they will set an interest rate relative to the value that they give to that person's credit. So if you have great credit, you may receive the lower interest rate. If you have bad credit, you may receive an interest rate that's substantially higher. The corporation does not do that. We have a single interest rate. We have a single credit criteria. And individuals who meet that credit criteria, either through their own credit or with a cosigner, are able to receive that rate.
So, Representative Ledoux.
So let's say you're a student and you don't have much of any credit history at all, and you've got parents who have a lousy credit history. Will you give the student a student loan?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, either the student or a cosigner has to meet the minimum credit standard. So they are declined if they are unable to either have a credit history themselves that shows an ability to repay debt or a creditworthy cosign.
Follow up, Representative Ledoux.
Then I'm beginning to wonder actually what good this does for many students. Because if you're not getting it cheaper than at a bank and you still need a credit history, I mean, why is the state even involved in this?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, the student loan program is one that is based on the student's best interest. We're not looking to return a profit. They are serviced in Alaska. We have deferments and repayment options for them that typically you do not find from a bank. For instance, if you are unemployed for up to a year, you can have a deferment of that debt. If you have a long-term disability that prevents you from working, we have terms that allow. So there are some considerations from the public policy perspective that you simply would not find from a financial institution. But you are correct. There are very, we are not underwritten by the state. The state does not fund the program. The state does not guarantee the loans. We're a standalone operation. The revenues from the loans pay for the cost of servicing the loans. And so it is, to some extent, comparable to what you would see in a standard financial institution.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Seaton.
Thank you. Section 41, page 16, with the new paragraph of who's an on-time student, 15 or more semester hours of credit or equivalent during the semester combination hours. What is, or is there any concern that on an annual basis, students may take 18 hours one semester and then need to work and take 12 the next? I think the previous standard was 12 hours. So is this new standard of 18 hours for every semester, not including any, because if you're making annual credits up through some online courses or summer courses or something else, those wouldn't count? As I'm reading this exact language, it has to be 15 hours every semester. Otherwise, even if you had 18 the semester before, if you're 14 this semester because that's the way the classes are configured, you're no longer an on-time student. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, in fact, it's not correct. What the on-time definition that's being added here does is create an additional enrollment level. It does not do away with the half-time student status or the regular full-time student status, which is the 12 credits. So in each of those situations, students would qualify for either a grant if they qualify for a grant or a loan if they qualify for a loan. It simply goes to the amount of loan they can borrow for that particular semester. So it wouldn't surprise me to see a student qualify for an on-time loan amount for one semester, a full-time loan amount for the next semester. It simply associates the intensity of their enrollment with the amount of loan they can receive for that period.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any more questions? Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Behrens, on page 1, line 13, page 2, line 23, there's reference to a private nonprofit institutions of higher learning. How many colleges in Alaska currently meet that standard? Is it just Alaska Pacific University, Wayland Baptist? Are there others that I don't know about?
There are Through the chair, Representative Sadler, there is Embry-Riddle Aeronautical, there is Alaska Bible, and I believe there is Alaska Christian College, and there's one more, which I can get for you. It's
is that in addition to Wayland Baptist and APU?
Yeah. Oh, no, that's right. That's it.
And those three, Embry-Riddle, Alaska Bible College, Alaska Christian College, those are in addition to Alaska Pacific University.
That's right. And
Wayland Baptist. Okay, good deal. I got other questions, yeah.
Yeah, Representative Sadler.
Actually, looking in Section 5 of the bill, there's reference, which is page 4 and 5. Just what's achieved by the change in Section 5? There's a swapping of the reference to if the obligation of the corporation is not a debt of the state. Just help me parse that. What is achieved by swapping those languages?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, our bond counsel advises that this is a correction, that the language more appropriately belonged in Section 6 and not in Section 5, and so we're making that correction.
And I have to ask this, too. So bonds that the commission issues are not a debt of the state, is that correct?
That's correct.
And if I could,
please.
I saw your letter of support for SB 195 and also for SJR 23, I think. Is there any linkages between these bills? Is there any assumption that if this one passes, the other one, because 23 seeks issuing GO bonds to support loans, is there any linkage or contingency between that resolution and this legislation?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, it has to go with the capacity to do certain things that this bill suggests. For instance, this bill suggests that we can provide sort of enhanced rates to borrowers if we have the capacity to do so. SGR 23, with the permission of the chair, would basically create that capacity. However, there are many things in this bill that are necessary that are unrelated to the other piece of legislation.
So this bill would allow the commission to take advantage of increased capacity, which would be offered. And what section of the bill does that permission reside in?
Yes, it's in Section 11, okay. On page 9. Lines 2 to 5. And I would point out through the chair, Representative Sadler, that this language does already exist. The corporation has the capacity to do this. This moves it to a more general provision.
Is this by which language you're referring to?
The language in Section 11.
Okay.
Currently, it exists, but it's applied only to the Alaska Supplemental Education Loan. This moves it into general powers so that it can apply to any of the loans that the corporation makes, whether that's the Supplemental Education Loan, the Family Education Loan.
Thank you.
Representative Ledoux.
So this gets back to my question about interest. Yes. Is it your intent then to provide loans that have interest which are less than you can get at a commercial institution?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, it's always the objective of the corporation to make the cost of loans as low as possible. One of the things that we have done over the years is we've found that our capacity to lower financing costs can vary from year to year depending on what's happening with the interest earnings of the corporation, what happens to other revenue to the corporation. And so what we've done is we try to set the interest rate as low as possible, but then to the extent that we have financial capacity to do so, we annually look at borrower benefits. And these are benefits that are applied as credits to a student's account. During very robust years, the corporation has delivered credits of almost $4.5 million to borrowers' accounts, reducing. These are direct credits that are applied. And this is what you won't see a bank doing, is that when we have the capacity to, we apply credits. For instance, in the current year, we have two sets of borrower benefits. One is a 0.25% discount for borrowers who use an automated online payment. We also have a 0.5% reduction for borrowers who are living in the state. So all told, we reduce interest rates by 0.75%, driving it down to 6.55 would be the effective interest rate on that. So that's but we can't set interest rates in a speculative sort of way, because that commits the corporation to a reduced income on those loans over the 10, 12, 15 years a borrower may be repaying. Rather, the corporation looks at these borrower benefits and applies those to the extent that we can. Currently, that's about $1 million a year.
Representative Ledoux.
And that's what kind of shocks me right now, is that even with these, the credits, et cetera, that the interest rate is 6.55, and that's more than a lot of banks are, than most banks, I think, are charging on unsecured or maybe kind of secured lines of, I mean, that's a pretty high interest rate right now.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I think if you actually did a survey of education loans, so assets of this kind, you would find that the interest rate that the corporation is charging is on the low end of the scale, that many lenders are issuing variable rate debts that for very high grade borrowers are rates that are lower than ours, but for borrowers with less outstanding credit, the rates are in excess of 10 or 11%.
Representative Reinbold.
I'm going to put my plug in for the Alaska Student Loan Program. I loved that program. I mean, there was thousands of us that left the state and came back and were able to do that, and we wouldn't have been able to do that otherwise, where they forgave 10% a year after they gave us a year or two. I love that program, and I'm going to continually put a plug in, and maybe there needs to be a few other sidebars, but I still think that's a great way to go.
Thank you. Any other questions? I'll ask if there's anybody in the audience or anybody signed up for public testimony. Seeing none, we'll close public testimony. Representative Reinbold.
I move Senate Bill 195-28-LS-1392 / N out of committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note.
Seeing no objections, bill has moved. And it looks like we're going to meet again on Wednesday, so we'll see each other here at 8 a.m. Wednesday morning. With that, House Education Committee is now adjourned.